It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
But it would really stink to just be starting your day, right? Good morning. How are you? I'm Gary McNamara. This is Red Eye Radio. Eric's under the weather, so it's me and you for this Friday. Thank you so much for being here. Anything happened yesterday?
So the United States shares a very important relationship, which is an alliance with the Republic of North Korea.
Really? We do? An alliance with North Korea? That's interesting. Man, just gaffe after gaffe after gaffe after gaffe. We have a gaffe a day. Sometimes more than a gaffe a day. We got a great show ahead. So much to talk about. States sue over the college loan transfer program. We will get to that. And in response to that, the Biden administration already has scaled back some of the student debt relief in response to the suits. We'll get to that. Back to Hurricane Ian as it heads towards the South Carolina coast. Now at 80 miles per hour, we will keep you updated throughout the night as to whether the speed of the winds of Ian get greater. Supposed to hit the coast somewhere. Looks like tomorrow afternoon at some time. So we'll keep you updated there. The liberal transgender activist movement update coming your way. We'll tell you about the Democrats who promote also that we stand for women. But none of those Democrats can define what a woman is. You know, Judge Jackson really got that one going. I mean, that's, I'm sorry. Liberals, you can't win that one. Well, you really can't win much these days, but you definitely can't win that one. We can't define what a woman is, but we support women. What's a woman? We don't know. Who can be a woman? We don't know. You can't define a woman? No, I can't define a woman. No, I just can't. I mean, that's beyond our intellect to be able to define a woman. Really now. So coming up, Europe's winter energy crisis, which is coming up, made worse by what is viewed now as suspected sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines. The transgender army major who was indicted for plotting to give secrets to Russia, that coming up. Inflation and GDP indicators not good as gas prices skyrocket on the West Coast. I mean, they're going through the roof in California. We'll have those numbers coming up. And we had mentioned, though, for as fast as they're going up in California, this was on yesterday's show, they're going up quicker in Oregon. So that, also the latest polling. Oh. And this is just you saw the new book coming out. It wasn't written by conservatives. Nope, not at all. We'll get to that coming up a little bit. That Democrats knew that impeachment won of Trump. They knew it was unconstitutional and lacked due process. Exactly what we said. The stuff coming out from Gerald Nadler is just huge. That apparently he said, no, you can't do this. It's unconstitutional. There is no due process. You have to have due process even in a political court. Due process is necessary. In order to be legit, you have to do it. That's exactly what we said at that time, and Democrats knew it all the time. So that and more coming up, plus we're trying to learn just exactly how close our alliance is apparently in the Biden administration with North Korea. So we're working on that one. You know, one of the questions that we have gotten is when we talk about, you know, the legalities of the student loan transfer, because it isn't forgiveness. I love it. Think about that entire concept just for a moment here. I come to you and say, I'm going to forgive your loan. Oh, really? Do I owe it to you? No. I'm going to forgive your loan, and that person's going to pay it. Oh, bless you for forgiving my loan. Hey, you're not forgiving my loan. You're just transferring it to that person, and you don't have the legal right to do that. That's what it is right now. But one of the things we have talked about, because this was the legalities of, okay, you had states yesterday, a number of states that sued the Biden administration. And the first thing that came up is, you know, they came up and said, okay, it's unfair, it's unconstitutional. And that's a great selling point, that it's unfair and unconstitutional. But when it comes to suing in federal court, you have to show that you're damaged in some way. And so how did they come up with the fact that they would be damaged in some way? We talked about the one individual who has sued the federal government. And I believe he's a resident of Indiana. And he said, if Congress passed the law to forgive my loan, then the state can't tax it. But if it's an executive order, that's not covered. And because he was in a program that will automatically reduce his bill, he can't opt in or opt out. He's already been opted in because of the federal loan that he has. The debt will just be forgiven, or it'll be transferred. It'll be wiped out for him, though, but the tax bill will be $1,000, which he will have to pay to the state of Indiana. And he said, hey, see, I'm affected here. I'm damaged. Therefore, I have a federal lawsuit. Well, the whole point was, okay, well, what do the states have? What can the states actually do? Well, the states are actually, there's a couple of points, which is why, and there's the article right there, the Biden administration scales back student debt relief for millions amid legal concerns. Because what happens is if there are loans that are transferred, students transfer their loans from private or financial institutions to the federal government. Well, when they do that transfer, there's a number of financial institutions that can lose money because of it. Well, if they already enacted that and they transferred it before September 29th, transferred it, you know, yesterday was deadline. Well, then, okay, your loan can be forgiven. But the Biden administration now says, after yesterday, if you haven't transferred that loan from a private loan to a federal loan, if you haven't made that transfer by the 29th, then sorry, you're not a part of the program. Now, it's about 770,000 is what they estimate the number of people who now the Biden administration will not attempt to transfer their loans to somewhere else. And part of it is because that's what was in the lawsuit. The lawsuit stated that these state businesses, these are financial institutions in their state that will be hurt. So that was number one. Number two, this was really interesting. And I don't have, in hopefully doing more research on this, we'll be able to actually find the specifics of it and what the amounts might actually be. And you probably see that in the lawsuit. In the lawsuit, Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt argues that the Missouri Higher Education Loan Authority, which is a semi-state entity which owns and services federally guaranteed student loans, faces economic harm from the debt relief program. Nebraska Attorney General Doug Peterson argues that in the lawsuit that some of his state's pension funds is invested in securities that are backed by federally guaranteed loans. The lawsuit says the Biden relief program could cut in half the size of that market and hurt the state's investments in it. Now, some of the other states argue that the entire student debt relief program, not just the federally funded or the federally guaranteed part, will cause them economic injury. They argue they'll face the loss of tax revenue as a result of Biden's student debt relief program for all types of federal student loans. But the part that they backed off on, the administration knew, they said, okay, that part we're really, really weak on. I think they're weak on everything. But the thing is, something could be unconstitutional, but you've got to have damage in some way. There's got to be damage to file that federal suit. So the attorney general said, okay, here's how it damages us. We have, you know, we have investments in these securities that held back this. You do that, that could cut our profits. Therefore, we're damaged. And then it gets into the whole point. All right, well, you're damaged, but still, does the federal government have the legal authority to do it? And that's where you get in to the point of, no, they don't have the legal authority. That gets you the in to argue your real point, which is it's unconstitutional, which, of course, it is. Because only, and we've talked about this before, only Congress can spend money. And this is, in essence, spending money and creating debt by hundreds of billions of dollars. And as we told you, you know, Biden said it, Pelosi said it, they've said it in the past. They all knew it was unconstitutional in the past. They knew it. They said it, which I'm sure will be used against them. So there you go. Just a little update there on that, and we'll continue to monitor what the specifics are when this lawsuit actually goes through as to what, you know, what precisely they're saying, what is the minutiae of the actual damages, and whether they can figure out what the amounts are for the states that have filed suit. We got a great show ahead. If you'd like to get in on the discussion, we would love to hear from you as always. 866-90-RED-EYE.
With diesel fuel at $5 per gallon in some places, it can really take a toll on your bottom line every time you fill up. To combat these prices, use a high-quality fuel additive that can not only improve your fuel economy on average to more than pay for the product, but also protect your truck. Look for a fuel additive that is fully formulated, like Hotshot's Secret Everyday Diesel Treatment. This 6-in-1 treatment turns your standard pump diesel into premium diesel by increasing cetane, lubricity, cleans fuel injectors, protects against moisture, and more. All of these benefits will increase your performance, increasing fuel economy, so that the savings will not only pay for the cost of the product, but also keep more money in your pocket. Hotshot's Secret EDT will increase fuel economy up to 3%. That's an extra 45 miles per tank, $37 worth of diesel, and a savings of 2 cents every mile on average. Protect your bottom line, protect your truck, and stay on the road with a premium diesel treatment like Hotshot's Secret Everyday Diesel Treatment.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Eric Harley here for a new sponsor, Total Tax, Inc. Total Tax knows how challenging it can be to run your own business. Whether it's just you and your rig on the open road, or if you operate a fleet, Total Tax can help. They've been helping small business owners like you across the USA since 1991 with an experienced and licensed team of financial and tax experts to help keep your business on track and successful. Whether you need help filing back tax returns, resolving taxes you owe, or staying on top of your bookkeeping and current tax returns, think of Total Tax as your business partner providing you with peace of mind while you're on the road. Total Tax is a family-owned business that understands our independent tradesmen are the backbone of America, and they look forward to serving your financial and tax needs so you can keep our country running strong by providing consistent, personal, dedicated, effective, and ethical service to their clients. Total Tax has sustained an A-plus BBB rating for over three decades. Go to TotalTaxForTruckers.com or call 855-920-4121 today and get a free consultation. That's TotalTaxForTruckers.com. TotalTaxForTruckers.com.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has a morning off. He is under the weather, so it's you and me this morning here for a Friday. I already had my coffee. Got a little bit of water here. You know, when we talk about the, maybe I should do that during the commercial breaks, but I needed the water then. When you look at the college loan transfer program, and, you know, we've gone over this before, but every time we talk about it, we should do it because it's what is viewed by the liberals today as fairness. And morality. They view it as a higher morality that if you took out a loan, you decided to do that. Nobody twisted your arm to do that. You decided to do that. You took it out. You receive the benefit. This isn't about this college loan, quote, forgiveness, end of quote, that they're calling it, or cancellation is not. It's a transfer of the debt from people who did not sign the contract. These aren't people that necessarily need help. They didn't have to pay. They still haven't had since the beginning of COVID to pay one payment of their student loan. For all that time, they didn't have to pay it. And so now, in order to buy votes, they said, okay, just a year ago, this is something we can't do. No, we can't do this. We can't do this. We can't do this. We can't do it. Oh, all right. Now we're going to do it. We all know it's unconstitutional. As we have said, by the way, the fact that it's not Congress doing it, because the left brings it up all the time, we're going by the Democrat standards of what fascism is, because they always talk fascism. Fascism, fascism. Not following the Constitution, which states that Congress is the one who decides how the money is spent. The president does not become a financial dictator who can say, oh, okay, I'm just going to wipe that out over there and throw that on the taxpayer. He can't do that unless Congress authorizes him to do that for a specific purpose. If Congress came out and said, because of COVID, you can forgive or you can transfer this debt, then the president could do it. Congress never gave that authority to Joe Biden to do that. He's reaching back and saying, oh, we allowed it for 9/11, so this is an emergency, and so we can allow it for this for now, too. No, that was for 9/11. That was specifically for law enforcement. And they even admit it that, well, we're trying to do it because we believe we can get away with it because we don't believe that they can prove, doesn't matter whether they can prove it's unconstitutional, the way the federal system works, they've got to prove that their state has been damaged in some way. Somebody has to have some type of damage, financial damage, especially financial damage, in order for them to make the point. We can do something unconstitutional because we found the loophole in the court system that you can only file a suit if you've been damaged. Well, now you've got these states coming saying, we've been damaged. Here it is. Financially, we've been damaged. Here it is. And so they know it's unconstitutional. They know it's not right. They know it's not moral. You can't make any of the case for all the time that we've talked about this. Oh, wow. For over a year, we've received two calls. That's it. Two calls of people that thought it was a fair thing to do because their student loan would be reduced. That's it. And we've seen in the polls, now that the public knows that it's not forgiveness, it's not a write-off, that it's a transfer of the debt to people who didn't take it off. A majority of the people, when told that, as we brought you the poll earlier this week, say, that's not a good idea. When they find out that, would you be for this if college tuition is raised because of it? We all know the college bubble. Mark Cuban has talked about the college bubble. Not exactly a right-wing conservative. But part of the reason the college has skyrocketed has been because of the easy money. Well, when Americans were asked that, they said, no, that's not fair either. We're not for it now. When you tell Americans the truth, they're against it. So why didn't the Biden administration do that?
The Bona Show.
And I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has a morning off because he is under the weather this morning. Hopefully he gets well soon and is back for Sunday night, Monday morning's show. Good morning. You know, I was just looking at yesterday, looking at more of the video, and I spent a ton of time not watching the Weather Channel. I dropped my satellite a while back, and so there hadn't been a hurricane for a while, so I didn't even know on, you know, my over-the-air or my internet free channels that I get, I didn't know what weather services I have. Well, one of the over-the-air stations here in the Dallas area, they carry Fox Weather Live. It's really, really good. It's really good without having to put up with any narrative of liberal climate change. But they were really, really good. But they had people also out there actually in the midst of the storm. And I will admit, I looked at that and said, okay, you don't need to do that. Actually, what was more impressive was a lot of the cell phone video that would come in where you could see, you know, really where the water was, or some of the time-lapse photography. I saw one on Twitter a little while ago that showed a 15-foot storm surge and, you know, time-lapsed over probably an hour or so. And it was amazing because you see in the time-lapse, there's a car going down. All of a sudden, the water starts coming. Next thing you know, it's 15 feet. I mean, it's a river. And you look at it and go, that's pretty impressive, and gives you an indication of what it, you know, what the storm is like. But that has been part of the discussion of the media analysis of how they covered Ian and other hurricanes. Do you really need people out in the middle of the hurricane, you know, standing and leaning into the wind, branches hitting them? Is that really needed? Well, none of it's needed. No, it's not. But they choose to do it, and it does get to be compelling television, whether you believe it's necessary or not. But I don't know who the person was, because it wasn't like was it Jim Cantore, or it was because I was watching Fox, and I don't know who the people were, but they did a great job. And as they've got that stance down and leaning into where the wind's coming from, it made me flash back to the blizzard of 77 in Buffalo, New York, which was the blizzard of all blizzards. I mean, it was just, you had hurricane force winds and you had snowdrifts that could go 20, 30 feet high. It was unbelievable. And I'll never forget, in the middle of it all, dressed as close to an Eskimo as I possibly could, along with my buddy Jeff, and anchoring ourselves in the snow and trying to fall over into the wind, and we couldn't do it. And the wind would keep, you know, it was probably 75, 76 mile an hour winds, because they were Cat 1 winds in the wintertime in a winter storm. And there we are. Okay, let's lean over. And it would just push us back. But we were in this thick snow, probably up to our knees, so we could start again. We were anchored. But just all those great memories of being in college when that happened. Now, that was a heck of a storm, I'm telling you. Right now, still, it's back to Hurricane Ian, is a Cat 1, 80 miles an hour. We'll keep you updated when the new hurricane update comes in. Supposed to hit the coast of South Carolina sometime, looks like tomorrow afternoon. This is amazing, because this is not a book that was written by any conservative at all. This was written by a reporter from Politico and a Washington Post reporter. Unchecked, the untold story behind Congress's botched impeachments of Donald Trump. And in it, it recounts how House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff and Speaker Pelosi overrode objections from Gerald Nadler that the lack of witness testimony was a denial of due process for then-President Donald Trump. Nadler reportedly put it plainly and correctly, quote, "It's unfair and it's unprecedented and it's unconstitutional," end of quote. If you were around during the impeachment, those words are as close to what Eric and I said as you could get. Reading here from Jonathan Turley's column, who said, "Wow, that sounds like me." And you remember Turley in the first impeachment testified before Nadler and criticized the lack of any factual witnesses or Judiciary Committee hearings supporting the articles of impeachment. He said the book, however, has brought no sense of vindication as much as frustration. Nadler publicly toed the line with Pelosi to support a process that he reportedly viewed as abusive and unconstitutional. And he writes, even as some of us were set upon by a legion of irate pundits, remember, because Turley was criticized severely for doing it. Well, you had, as they point out here in the book, Schiff and his staff vehemently disagreed with what the Democrats were doing. Worse yet, the book indicates that the ban on witnesses and due process was not compelled by the schedule as claimed by Pelosi and Schiff, but by raw politics. On the second impeachment, they went one better. They jettisoned any witnesses, including legal experts, in what many of us called the snap impeachment, as Turley did too. The book appears to confirm also that the reason they didn't do it in the second impeachment was that neither Pelosi nor Schiff wanted to risk a witness or member going off script by allowing true due process. When Nadler raised historical and constitutional objections, Adam Schiff reportedly barked back that he needed to change his tone and complained, "You're putting us in a box." As Turley writes, that box is an effort to guarantee fairness. And Nadler reportedly and correctly observed that, quote, "If we're going to impeach, we need to show the country that we gave the president ample opportunity to defend himself." So Nadler knew. He knew in both impeachments. He knew. It turns out Nadler and his staff reached that same conclusion and cautioned Schiff and Pelosi to stick close to the Nixon and Clinton cases. They refused. Dan Goldman, Schiff's lead counsel, this is in the book apparently, and the Democratic nominee to represent New York's 10th district in the House, scoffed and mocked Nadler. Jerry Nadler, with him, everything is negotiable. When Nadler's team argued for an approach more like Nixon, Schiff's team reportedly dismissed due process and said, this is a quote from the book, F Donald Trump, end of quote. It's everything that we have said. So, when we look at Liz Cheney, for Liz Cheney to be involved in the January 6th committee, which is not allowing any defense, any cross-examination of the witnesses or evidence that they have presented, knowing all of this that happened, for her to in any way promote the fact that she is about conservative principles is laughable. She continues to promote the fact that the reason that the Republican Party disagrees with her is because they support an unlawful Donald Trump. That's not the case. The reason that we object to what she is doing is because she feels no sense of due process at all. No sense of fairness. That's why the American people, why do you think they've lost on this? The American people look at the January 6th committee and go, nope, sorry. Just like the impeachment. It's got nothing to do with whether you agree with what Trump did or did not do. It's simply, even in the political process, there is an expectation, and Democrats know it, of fairness and due process. In impeachment one, impeachment two, and the January 6th committee, there is none. And that's why. And what the Democrats did with impeachment is they made impeachment not matter anymore. Impeachment doesn't taint. That in itself did not destroy the popularity of Donald Trump. It didn't do what they expected it to do, because Americans could look at it and say, there's no due process here. We expect due process. One thing, and this is, Eric and I have talked about this so many times before, one thing is there's been so many law shows on over the last 50 years that's one thing that America actually does know. We know how the process is supposed to run. If it doesn't run that way, people look at it and go, okay, yeah, maybe I hate Trump or whatever he did, but the fact is this isn't due process. And the people that support him, it just absolutely reiterates that the other side does not want to live by the constitutional rules and regulations that were set up. And Nadler coming out, according to the book, and saying, this is unconstitutional, will be used by every Trump supporter to say, see, we told you, they don't care about the Constitution. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you'd like to get in, coming up following the top of the hour, Europe's winter energy crisis, the liberal DAs across the country, and one interview in particular that was out yesterday from the Philly DA that was just the most bizarre thing that you could ever imagine, stating that the crime is really increasing in the red states, and of course not saying, well, actually, in the large cities, maybe in red states, they're increasing. That's run by Democrats that have the same defund the police, bail reform that you have. And apparently he screamed Republicans lie, but we'll get to that coming up here just a little bit. I love this story. The federal judge who vows to stop hiring law clerks from Yale Law School. Well, look, they're not turning out lawyers anymore. They're turning out political activists. I can understand why. And here we go again. There's a headline. The top Democrat candidates who wish to cash in with women-themed campaign merchandise. They want to promote to women, but they cannot define what a woman is. You can't make this stuff up. Oh, God. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Top of the Hour News is brought to you by Howe's Products. Visit howesproducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. We are Red Eye Radio. Thank you so much for being here this morning. Eric has the morning off. He's under the weather, but I'm here with you. 866-90-RED-EYE, if you'd like to get on board. Download our Red Eye Radio app today, and if you cannot listen overnight live to one of our great radio stations, you can listen when and where you want right on your phone. Latest update here from the National Hurricane Center. Hurricane Ian is now at still a Cat 1 hurricane, heading towards the South Carolina coastline, 85 miles an hour. When we had checked the last update from 3 hours ago, it was 80 miles an hour, so it's looking like it's going to hit the coast as all likelihood as a Cat 1, and it looks like it will hit the coast sometime on Friday afternoon, it looks like right now, from what I can estimate from the cone graph that I'm looking at right now. Movement north-northeast at 10 miles an hour. The entire coast of South Carolina is under a hurricane warning. So right now, and the tropical storm warnings on the coast still go all the way down to North Florida and all the way up through to North Carolina. So that's what we have right now, and we will keep you updated on it. I did see some of the coverage yesterday in Florida. Man, oh man, some of the damage is just unbelievable. I've got some friends who a couple of years ago, they decided that they wanted to live on a boat, and their first choice was, and they're from Texas, first choice was to go down near Galveston. Then that hurricane hit, and they said, well, we're going to try to do something different. They found a boat, and they moved down near Fort Myers. Now, they were showing the place where they had their boat taken out of the water and put into storage. That building, not sure how their boat is, but that building that the boat was in, they got some pictures of it, and it looked like it was pretty torn up, even though you could see boats in there that looked like that they were okay, and hopefully their boat ended up all right, because that's their home. They live on their boat. So other than that, all of my friends, and I've got one old friend, I haven't seen him in years, but somebody who I grew up with. He lives in Venice, and we thought that, you know, he thought it was going to hit, I think, like a lot of people did, they thought it was going to hit Tampa, and it did not. And so he stayed in his house, but he was all right. Then I have another friend who lives in Fort Myers, and they came out of it fine, too. There was damage and trees down, but they didn't even have any flooding in their actual homes. So you could see that the streets might have had a few inches of water in it, but they were able to escape. Another friend of mine lives in Sarasota. He was okay. And then my friend Jerry and his wife Mary, and I've talked about him before, we worked as bill collectors together in college. We've remained great friends over the years. I visit him and his wife one time, at least one time a year. Sometimes we're able to make it two times, and then he'll come and visit me once in a while. But we've remained great friends. He lives outside of Tampa, and you know, they weren't sure what they were going to do. And finally one day he said, nope, we're on the way to St. Augustine. They stayed there one day and then went back to went to Gainesville trying to. I said, you're running from Ian. And he says, exactly. And so spent the night in Gainesville. And then they headed back yesterday morning, and they got back. And I called him, said, all right, how is it? And he goes, except for some tears, you know, in the screen of their pool, he said, and some trees down, said, no damage. So very, very happy to hear that. But there's just a heck of a lot of damage. So many people, you know, you look at some of those outer island barriers, the barrier islands, man, they were just completely destroyed. I'm seeing figures. One figure I saw was $40 billion. But watch some of the press conferences there yesterday, and saw DeSantis again, and I'll tell you this, he holds, we'll see how the actual response is, and he'll be judged by the actual response. I'm telling you, his press conferences, he puts out an image, we're all business, we're here to take care of business, it's not about politics, we're here to help people, and he seems to have an answer to every single question, and if he doesn't, he brings somebody else up immediately who can answer the question. So if you look at that with an election coming up, that this could be the, you know, the turn for a possible dominant win. That's just the reality of politics. But so far, and again, he'll be judged by the actual results of the cleanup. But as we know, still, you see some of the destruction that's there. It's going to take months and months, in some cases, years, in order to repair. So our best going out to everyone. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE. Economic news, not good. No. The U.S. economy was even weaker in the first half of the year than previously thought, data from the Commerce Department indicated. Gross domestic product contracted by 1.6% in the first 3 months of the year, and by 0.6% in the final analysis, April through June, meaning the economy shrank for two consecutive quarters. Those who argue that the economy was not actually in a recession could point to the low unemployment rate and a measure of the economy known as gross domestic income, which had been reportedly as growing 1.8% in the first quarter and 1.4% in the second quarter. On Thursday, the Commerce Department released revisions of its estimates of GDP and GDI. The GDP estimates were unchanged, but the GDI estimate for the first half of the year were marked down sharply. First quarter GDI grew at 0.8% annual rate, and second quarter GDI growth was a mere 0.1%. Many economists look to the average of GDI and GDP as a signal for the health of the economy. Prior to the revisions, that average appeared to imply that the U.S. economy was growing in the first half of the year, supporting the claim that the U.S. economy was not in a recession. After the revision, the average GDI indicates the economy shrank 0.3% in the second quarter and 0.4% in the first quarter. So not good. Also, a key measure of inflation rose more in the first half of the year than previously believed, new government data showed. The Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index, a measure of inflation produced by the Commerce Department, showed prices rising at a 7.5% annualized rate in the first quarter and 7.3% in the second quarter. The previous estimate had prices rising 7.1% rate in each quarter. The PCE price index is the Fed's preferred measure of inflation. When the Fed says it targets 2% inflation, it is referring to the PCE index. It tends to follow the same dynamic as the consumer price index over time, although it is usually somewhat lower. The index for durable goods and the prices rose at an 8.3% in the first quarter and 2.4% in the second quarter. In the prior estimate released in August, the prices had risen 6.5% in the first quarter and 1.4% in the second quarter. It's interesting that when the numbers first come out, you know, like GDP especially, people pay attention to them. When the revisions come and then the data that actually goes into what the Fed believes actually indicates more likely what the economy is doing when it's worse. Boy, this story really wasn't covered much at all yesterday. You didn't see this at all. Prices for non-durable goods, including food and gasoline, rose 15.2% in the first quarter and 15.7% in the second quarter, up from the prior estimate of 15% and 15.5%. Inflation in the service sector was revised up to 4.9% in the first quarter and 5.6% in the second quarter. The August estimate had services prices rising 4.6% and 5.5%. So both in the first and the second quarter, the revised numbers show that it's worse than we thought it was going to be. And now with the CPE overall and what it ended up being, the consumer price, the PCE, the personal consumption expenditure price index, now that that is at negative 0.3%, that was the one excuse they were giving for not calling it a recession. And now you can view that and look at it and say, yeah, there were two quarters of negative growth, both GDP and PCE were in a recession. And we may be, if we were a third quarter of negative growth in both of those indicators, then we're not just in a recession. We're in a recession that, unfortunately, many experts believe could continue into next year. So there you go, just making sure you have the numbers. Not pleasant to talk about, but someone actually has to look at the truth and give you the numbers on it. By the way, I got Breitbart had two stories on that I took those stats from, just so you know where I got it from. But those, I got it from Breitbart, but they got it actually from the Labor Department. Those are the Labor Department numbers. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on transport security. Trailer seals are often used to deter theft and maintain cargo security. Typically, trailer seals fall into two categories, indicative seals and barrier seals. Indicative seals are made for one-time use and let the driver or shipper know if cargo has been disturbed, but they are not strong enough to prevent tampering with cargo. Barrier seals are meant to prevent intrusion and often require bolt or cable cutters to remove. Before the seal is removed at the receiver, the driver may be asked for identification and a bill of lading or shipping papers. The driver and the receiver should match the bill of lading or other load-related numbers and paperwork, inspect the seals, and match the numbers with corresponding documentation. Once the paperwork is verified, then the security seal can be broken and the shipment unloaded. You should supervise the unloading process and report any discrepancies to your company as soon as possible. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by Pilot Flying J and by Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley. He has a morning off. I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Gas prices soared 16 cents overnight Wednesday night into Thursday in Los Angeles County, in exceeding $6 per gallon throughout the region and continuing a trend that has seen gasoline prices rise 70 cents in 1 week in the county. Now, we know, and we brought you the story yesterday, that Oregon is rising even faster than California as a state. This is focusing in, though, on Los Angeles County. The local ABC affiliate reported the average price of a gallon of self-serve gasoline in LA County. Oh, wow, they allow you to pump your own? Okay. In Oregon, they didn't. They still don't know, I believe. But in Los Angeles, while they trust you, well, they've got to end that. But the price of self-service gasoline in L.A. County jumped another 16 cents overnight to $6.26. And every county in Southern California is also paying more than $6 a gallon. The average price has increased nearly 70 cents in a week. L.A. County's 16-cent overnight increase for a gallon of regular gasoline is the biggest one-day spike in more than 7 years. In Orange County, the average is $6.25, while drivers in Riverside County are paying $6.10 a gallon. Do you want to know what I paid if you're listening in California? What did I pay yesterday?
$1 million.
$2.95. Oh, I'm sorry. It was down to $2.93. $2.93 is what I paid. California drivers are paying about $2 a gallon more than the national average. One explanation for the recent rise is that some local refineries are undergoing maintenance that was deferred from the spring when gas prices were near record highs. Ironically, that has sent prices rising again. Other refineries are having unanticipated problems. KBC suggests the prices may drop near winter when the gas stations are allowed for a winter blend that costs less to produce. I don't know how, you know, I just don't know how you can deal with that day in and day out. I can't imagine paying that for gasoline. That does, you talk about prices, and I did see there was a picture of one gas station, and I believe it was in the LA area, that was actually charging $8 a gallon. I know, well, we know that the high gas prices, we know what we saw over the summer. We know that it stopped people from driving. That's why gas prices came down. People said, I can't afford to drive. And as we have stated before, and we will continue to state it, is there any Democrat out there that believes that Joe Biden or the Democrats actually want lower gasoline prices? If you're in California, you know that's not the case. You know the left wants as high gasoline prices as they can give you and still get elected. And in California, people are fine with that. Most other states, they are not. But that's what happened over the summer when Biden was saying, see, gasoline prices are coming down. Yeah, inflation is so bad. And the gas prices were so high, people said we can't afford to drive. And we know that's exactly what Democrats wish to do. And you can't afford to drive, but they believe that you can afford to buy an electric vehicle. And again, as we noted yesterday, would you want an electric vehicle in Florida right now? In some places where the power won't be turned on for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. I still go back to it, though. This isn't talked about enough. Republicans should pound this day in and day out. Whenever Biden talks about that he wants lower gasoline prices, we'll then go after him because he is the one that admit you can't. Liberals, you can't win this argument, and you know you can't win the argument. And we'll get into this more coming up, the Strategic Oil Reserve, where he admits he knows what the problem is. Well, we're lowering prices because we've opened up the strategic reserves, and they're at their lowest level in 30 years. But more supply lowers price. Duh!
Twenty-five hours a week on your favorite radio station, online, or in our app, Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has a morning off because he is under the weather. It is you and it is me. Yeah, so we know that the president understands that what decreases gasoline prices is an increase in supply. That's why he has tapped into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and taken it to its lowest level in since, what, the early 1980s? And now the questions are coming up, are we putting our nation in peril because we shouldn't have to do that? Yeah, but he admits by doing it, the admission is there that supply increases it. So the question should be for the president, if anybody actually believes that he wishes to lower gasoline prices, is why did you close the Keystone Pipeline? Why are you making, why is permitting less in your administration than it has been for such a long time, for decades upon decades upon decades upon decades? Those would be the questions that you would ask. Why aren't you promoting the production of gasoline and natural gas? Because everybody knows who's paying attention. Everyone knows. Every Democrat who pays attention knows that Democrats want high gasoline prices. They want high fuel oil prices. They want high energy prices across the board. We all know it. And that's one of the interesting things, because it's across the board. Anybody who's paying attention knows that the reason that the borders, the situation at the border is going on is because that's what the Democrats want. They created the problem. Their whole goal is they're angry that they haven't got gasoline prices even higher. They don't want you to drive your vehicle. They know you can't afford an electric car. They don't care. They wish to live in their delusion that they are saving the planet, or more importantly, their ultimate goal, we believe, which is to control more of the capital, have the government control the money, have the government control the means of production. That's their whole goal. That's what the Green New Deal was all about, as we have brought up many times before. But it's so obvious. Everybody knows it, but we pretend it's not happening. You can see a perfect example when the media finally had enough with Karine Jean-Pierre 2 days ago. And the White House is still doubling down that it was, by the way, I do love the edited clips that have come out where Jean-Pierre, top of mind. That they can't admit, everyone knows, there isn't anybody who has seen that, that believes that what he did was based on the fact that he was thinking of the family. And the left had enough, finally, of the BS coming from the administration, where they finally went into a little revolt 2 days ago. They all knew they were being BS. Now, the question that Eric and I have is, wait a minute. You allow them to lie to you each and every day, and then you get angry when they continue to lie about something that you view is just so obvious and stupid. And then you get upset because the White House spokesperson calls you rude. All of a sudden, that's what sets you off. Everybody knows now Biden has cognitive problems. The exact cause, don't know. Videos come out every day. The video when he gave the speech on relief to Florida, and he walked the wrong way, and they're calling him, and he just continues walking, and then eventually they follow him. But he looked completely and totally lost. Everyone knows he is having cognitive problems. Everyone. Every day there's something else happening, but the left just pretends it's not happening. Same with the border. Everyone knows who is paying attention that the border situation is what the Democrats want. It's not, well, just because of these circumstances that we're under in the world, they're all coming to our border. Nope. That's not it. Democrats know it. They're coming because Biden invited them. How do we know? Because when you ask a migrant or an illegal immigrant why they're coming up, Biden invited us. They all know. We all know. They want what's going on at the border. They want these incredibly high gasoline prices. By what they're doing on inflation, you know, and what they would pass if they had the ability to do it, they don't care about inflation hurting you. They cause the inflation. They don't care. The American public in the polls knows they cause the inflation. They don't care. Make it worse. Continue to spend more money. And so we actually live in a country, and this is what, to me, is completely and totally unique in American history about what's going on right now, is everyone knows the emperor has no clothes. I have never seen this. I have never seen this in any Western government, Western democratic government in my lifetime. Nothing close to it. The fact is, everybody knows, the opposition will expose it, people who may be independent politically but are intellectually honest will look and say, yeah, we know it. The media knows it, but everybody pretends that what is going on, we're talking about on the left and the Democratic Party, everybody pretends that everything is just fine. The economy is doing great. The border is secure. Inflation just went up a tiny bit. It's no big deal. What's the problem? Don't ask me the question. I'm insulted you asked me the question on inflation. Everything is great and wonderful. The high gasoline prices. Well, now that we're close to a month from Election Day, all of a sudden Biden is screaming, do it now. Lower the gasoline prices. Everyone knows he doesn't want the gasoline prices lowered, except between now and Election Day, so then they can win the election and it goes back up to being high again. If you're a Democrat, you know all these things are true. You know, and how do you know it? Not because I'm saying it, but because Democrats have said it over and over and over again. And the most fascinating thing about American politics right now is the fact that it's not like, okay, we're not sure if he's lying because all the facts aren't in. Everybody knows that the administration and Democrats are lying about every single major issue. Defund the police. You see that now. Now they're trying to pass, well, we need to pass legislation to fund the police. We were never against funding the police. We all know they were. They were all against it. All of them. We saw, what was it? What Democratic governor incumbent was it? Who all of a sudden completely flipped on the liberal transgender activist movement. No, boys should not play girls' sports. Yet she advocated in every veto when it came to her, no, we're not going to pass that legislation. That's what's amazing. And it's interesting, the people that belong to that party and vote to that party, they know it. I saw the mayor the DA of Philadelphia did that interview with the TV station. You see that? Oh, jeez. No, it's the Republican states where the crime is increasing. Well, actually, it's the liberal cities in those conservative states where it's increasing. That's a lie. That's a lie. Republicans lie is what he's... Everybody knows that DA is lying. We all know where crime is out of control is Democrat-run cities in blue states and Democrat-run cities in red states. But where the crime is out of control, the vast majority are Democrat-run cities, and we all know it. There isn't one issue that the American public doesn't know where the Democratic Party really stands on it. And they're against it. They're against it. Oh, but the DA was on there saying, oh, no. I still have great support. Remember, I got elected by the people of Philadelphia. The worst crime areas are the ones that support me the most. And so it's all great. We're all doing great. The crime isn't happening here. No, it's not. Inflation isn't happening here. People aren't really feeling it, inflation. They've got their excess savings to take care of that. In the Democrat delusion, everything is fine and dandy. There is no crime problem. The border is secure. Inflation is not bad. What's wrong with you? A biological man can be a biological woman if they wish to be. Everything is pure lunacy. And everybody knows it and just pretends, those that support the party and the media, just pretends that it doesn't exist. That's what's really unique in American politics today. And this includes the voter for Democrats who still support Democrats, even though they disagree with them on all the major issues of where they stand. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley. He has a morning off. I'm Gary McNamara. I am here. And to complete, put the cherry on top of the lunacy milkshake of the left that everybody knows. Everybody knows what's going on. Everybody who's paying attention knows what's going on, and nobody believes it. But to put the cherry on top, this is Representative Clyde talking to a Democrat witness from Planned Parenthood, Dr. Kumar, yesterday about whether men can get pregnant.
And let's just keep it real simple. Just two yes or no questions. And this is for Dr. Kumar. Dr. Kumar, can biological men become pregnant and give birth?
So men can have pregnancies, especially trans men.
So especially trans men, but frequently biological men? Because the answer is no, biological men cannot get pregnant. Think about that. No, that in itself, when you think about where the Democratic Party has gone, shouldn't that be to anybody a benchmark that nothing matters to them? Think about the intimidation, the wall of intimidation that exists in our society today if you won't lie about something that every single person there, I'm sorry, there's nobody ignorant about what sex is. Every Democrat knows that the Democratic Party is lying about it. Everybody knows that Judge Jackson, in her test, in her hearing to be Supreme Court Justice, lied when she said she couldn't describe or define a woman. We all know that was a lie. Everyone does. But it's okay. Why is it okay? I don't know. You hear some reasons. Well, because the people will feel bad. Well, people need to deal with the truth. Should we lie about everything else so people don't feel bad? Is that what we do? I can still have compassion from somebody who believes that they are the opposite sex. I have a great deal of compassion for them. I'm not going to abandon science. That's the great mystery about why so many Democrats go along with it when they know. I mean, if you want a warning sign that you have a party that's unhinged, isn't basic biological science and the denial of it one sign?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. He's under the weather. We hope he recuperates and is back here for Sunday night, Monday morning's show. You know, I was I'm just getting a little bit nostalgic when I was talking about, you know, where the Democrats stand today, just because I look back at, you know, at the history of doing talk radio. And today, right now, today, this day today is the end, the completion of a full 33 years of talk radio for me. When I come in Sunday night, Monday morning, hopefully with Eric, I will be starting year 34 in talk radio. In July, I passed 40 years overall in radio, but it's a full 33. I started in the first week of October of 1989. And, you know, looking back at what we used to talk about, some of the big issues that, believe it or not, the deficit back then was a big issue. I remember that. The deficit was big. So people would discuss government spending, the fall of the Berlin Wall. Looking back, 1989, 1980, Exxon Valdez oil spill in Alaska. you know, all these things that you could debate liberal versus conservative. And people would call and you would discuss the reality of the issues and what should be done about it. But people were actually discussing the actual issues and, for the most part, trying to be intellectually honest. This is where we should spend our money. We should spend our money. And environmental issues were there because at the time it wasn't global warming as much as it was at that point aerosols and the ozone layer. And so you look at those kind of things. You could look at race, I guess. Well, also, I mean, race has always been an issue that, you know, has been discussed. Oh, I remember this because I started late 1989, so I'm going back to my first year of talk radio. You know, one of the biggest topics back then, I believe this happened in early 1990, if memory serves me right, smoking. You couldn't smoke on an airliner anymore. That was a huge issue. I think, let me go back, let me just check here. I know it was in the early part of that year. That it was like, nah, you can't smoke anymore on an airliner. And so that was a talk radio topic. People would talk about that. Berlin Wall coming down. To me, that was huge. I will tell you that still today, that was one of the, I think, biggest topics that I ever covered. Because we couldn't believe that that was happening. Nobody could believe that. I never thought that that would happen in my lifetime. Never. I'm just trying to see what the exact date of that was, the exact date of when they started it. Yeah. So November 9th of 1989. So I was just in talk radio 30 days. And I think back of how we would actually discuss the issues and the left would be willing to discuss the issues. Now we really don't discuss issues anymore. You don't get into that anymore. Talk radio has shown. Now, I want to discuss the issues, and we still do it from our side. And we like to explain why we believe what we believe, but that's just the format of our show. We think that people should understand. And I got this one thing, and it's always been in my mind because my Uncle Norm, who probably always voted, I would guess, I don't know if he voted for Reagan or not, but for the most part, he was a Democrat. I'll never forget. And I'd been in talk radio maybe about, this might have been 94, 95, 96. And he used to listen and he told me, he said, I don't always agree with you, but I like you because I understand how you get to the conclusion of what you believe. You actually explain to people. I understand the process of how you got to where you are. And he said that makes it a lot easier to hear ideas you disagree with because I know the process. It isn't just an emotional rant. There's a process behind it. And I always took that as one of the biggest compliments I ever got. And love my Uncle Norm because he's the one he is really the one. My grandfather started it on that side, but my uncle really solidified my love of hockey. And for those of you who might not know it, you know, my grandfather on my dad's side, he emigrated from Canada. I'm going to guess was maybe, I'm not sure the exact year, maybe 1913, 1914, maybe 1912, whatever. And he came to the United States because of the incredible discrimination of Irish Catholics in Ontario. And I didn't know that until a couple of years ago when I forgot. I think it was my nephew was telling me, because my dad had talked to him, and my dad had never told me the story. And my grandfather had never told me the story. And he said, oh, yeah, your Gramps came here because of the incredible discrimination that existed. I had to go back and look up. I'd go back and look it up. I'm like, wow, I had no idea. I had no idea. And I said, Dad, he never talked about it. He goes, because he was a forward-looking guy. He would never bring up stuff in the past. And that was, and when my dad said that, I said, yep, that was my grandfather, always looking forward. He viewed it as a, he viewed it as a complete waste of time to look at anything in your past. You look forward. When he came, just so people know the political background of my family, especially on my my dad's side, because that was such a huge influence. I think people know the influence, you know, my father has had on me, who's still alive today and doing great. I talked to him today, 96, and just doing wonderful. But my my grandfather, even though he would be viewed as very conservative today, when he moved to the town that I grew up in, there was only a Republican Party. And so my grandfather looked and said, I've got to be part of an opposition party to them. Not that he disagreed with everything. He just came to the United States, went through the process, became a citizen, and just said, you can't have a one party system. In every town, there has to be at least an opposition party. He would be a Republican today. My father guarantees me of that. Just on the abortion issue alone, my grandfather went to church every single day that he could. If he could go to church, he went to church, and he had his own business. He was a machinist, and then built a machine shop in his own garage, and then worked from his garage, and worked his entire life. The work ethic that I'm sure my father has came from his father, and it was also, you know, passed down to me. And I say it in the form of it becomes just who you are. We've talked about work before. I view work as one of the greatest things that anybody could ever do. Work develops you in ways that nothing else can. It develops you. It matures you. When you're in, you learn that the truth matters. When you're actually in the private sector, and you actually have to produce, and you do, and you accomplish things, and you do it right, and you design things, or you take a piece of metal and you're able to, you know, produce something out of it that actually is used in modern society. There's a lot of pride in that. And so a lot of my family became Democrats. And as you got into the 70s and then the 80s is where you started seeing the split, that one side of the family became much more, you know, were, you know, promoted being much more conservative and Republican. And the other side, you had Democrats, but even they were much more conservative than any Democrats you saw today. But as I complete my 33rd year of talk radio today, I just look back and say, it's really amazing how much it changed. We've become more fact checkers than anything else, because the left actually does not want to discuss the issues. They don't want to discuss what they really believe about, immigration and the borders. We see it right now. I mean, they took strong stands when they thought that nobody would object to it, or they thought the liberal wall of intimidation could defeat any argument. And I still say that in all my years of talk radio, the summer of 2020, when it was accept Black Lives Matter and accept that all police departments are systemically racist, that to me, for absurd as it was, based on knowing the actual stats of what police do, Not that you can't call out individual police officers for doing wrong, but the broad stroke and the wall of intimidation that made sports leagues and industries keel over to a lie, that is still the most intimidation I've ever seen that has come out of the left. And I'll tell you this, it was really only, you know, the conservative TV networks and conservative talk radio that really said, no, we're not falling for that crap. And it did seem at times like you were in a pretty lonely place because you could feel it. But it was based on a lie. And that's the thing, when I look the 33 years, it's still the best time to do talk radio, because when the opposition of what, when the opposite of what you believe is so strong and so illogical, with a complete lack of critical thinking and delusional thought, it's actually quite easy to do a talk show. Especially when you talk about those topics, because it's so self-evident. But where the Democratic Party has gone, and what I've seen in 33 years, the change in this country is the self-evident, things that are absolutely self-evident, the left denies. You know, the whole thing, think how ridiculous it is. Oh, I can't define what a woman is. You're a liar. It's self-evident. We know what it is. There are certain things that are self-evident. Nope, not for us. Nope, we deny it. Well, but I believe in things that are absolutely rock hard science. Well, then you're a racist. Well, then we'll name call back and forth. I can come up and name call you too, but doesn't get you anywhere. As we have said with the liberal transgender activist movement of men should play women's sports. Well, we were the first to come out and say, well, you guys are transphobic. Fine, you're a misogynist. Let's name call back and forth. You're a misogynist. You hate women. All right, now let's talk about, now that we've got past the name calling, let's actually talk the truth about this. They don't want anything to do with it. That's been one of the major, major changes that I've seen in 33 years of talk radio. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. He has a morning off because he's under the weather, and I'm Gary McNamara. I am here with you. And it was just here in the last half hour, at the top of the hour, where I went, because we were talking about different things, and I just went, oh, wow, because I completely forgot about it. Today ends 33 years of talk radio for me, and next week begins the 34th year. And just looking back and seeing, you know, what the issues are today versus the issues, you know, back then. By the way, the savings and loans, that was a huge issue at that time. And you know what else was huge way back then? In 19, that was really, I think, 89, 90, especially 90, flag burning was a huge issue. It was just, and so the constitutional issues on flag burning were front, you know, front and center. In talk radio, you know, back then. But I look at it and all the issues, and the issues are still today for us so much, you know, economic based and legal based, but we're more fact checkers than ever. But the thing is, the left wasn't, there was nothing back then like, oh, can you define what a woman is? No. Can a biological man become a biological woman whenever they want? No. You know, you never had, you didn't have, for example, a government that would set a domestic policy, or a president that would set a domestic policy, like at the border, that would allow millions of people to cross the border and deny that it's happening. when the TV cameras are there and everybody knows it's not. That's the acceptance, the accept what is different. The one of the major differences is that I see in our society in the last 33 years is the acceptance of lies. The acceptance of lies by the people from politicians. The absolute acceptance that it's a normal part of it. And even if there were some people back then, the media would cover it. And now the media is also engaged in the lie. That's the difference. And the thing is, everybody knows they're lying. And just pretends to not notice that they're lying. We just won't discuss that the lies exist out there. That really, to me, is the one thing. And in a society where in the private sector, you can't do that and survive, there is an expectation that if you're not honest and you're not full of integrity in the creation and the marketing and the selling of your product, well, doggone it, you get sued because you must be held to the utmost standard of truth, integrity, and producing a quality product. Otherwise, we view it so wrong and so outrageous, yet the people that we actually elect to make our lives better will do things to make our lives worse, lie about it, and a vast majority of the public will accept it without any problem at all, unless it affects them personally. If they have to pay for something, then they'll object. That, to me, is one of the major differences in our society today as opposed to when I first got into talk radio 33 years ago, beginning of October of 89. And I'm glad I did. I'm glad I got in this business. It's a wonderful business. It's a wonderful business to be in where you get up every day and you can't wait to come into work. And the more insane things are, the more you want to come into work.
The Bonus Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Just reminiscing a little bit because, by the way, Eric's out sick this morning. Just reminiscing a little bit because this today ends my 33rd year in talk radio. So, just looking back at, you know, the what some of the issues were back then as to where they are now and the changes in our society. As I told you before, I never wanted to do this ever. Never. I had no interest in doing talk radio. The last thing I wanted to do was get on the radio and, number one, have to do the homework necessary to understand, at least have a, especially in the beginning when you first started, at least have a just a little bit of knowledge on a whole bunch of different things. And even that is a tremendous amount of homework. I always like to say there's about that after you've done it for 30 years, there's about 200 topics. And this was especially true if you were a local radio talk show host, as I was for such a long time. And I always stated, really, the problems are the same everywhere. Just learn those 200 issues that are on every single town and keep them in your head. Repetition. Think about it over and over again. Understand what your argument is and then just insert different names and different dates and different cities and you'll be okay as a talk show host. Because so many of the problems that we have are the same. I mean, almost everything we have is based, you know, is based on so many of the debates is based on economics and morality. And so, you know, I look back then and I didn't want to do it. I was station manager of a small radio station in Niagara Falls, New York. And we had a talk show. We were a full service AM station, which back then would be, you'd still be playing music during the day, but we had one talk show in the middle of the day. And we were making that transition. So I think it was about 87 I became. I think 87 is when I became the station manager. And then we had a talk show. And by the time we got to 89, we lost one of our talk show hosts. Had been there a long time. And I just couldn't find anybody to replace him. I just couldn't find anybody I like. And I had no intention of doing it. I was doing the morning show, which was, you know, fun banter back and forth. How you doing, kiddos? Make sure, hey, moms, make sure you dress those kids up before you send them out this morning. Don't send them out naked. It's cold outside. Make sure they've got their galoshes on. So, I mean, it was that kind of a thing. You know, and you play music, whatever. So I had no interest, none. And when I couldn't find anybody, the owner of the station, God rest her soul, she passed away last year in 2021. She told me, she said, I figured out what we're going to do. And I said, great, because I have no idea. She goes, well, you'll be really interested in who's going to be doing the show. And I said, oh, yeah, who? She said, you. And I said, I can't and I won't. And she said, you don't have a choice. I didn't get a raise. I didn't get anything. I might have been mad at her back then. You know, no raise, no anything. Just do the show. Best gift professionally I ever got. Somebody forcing me to do something that I didn't want to do. And I was absolutely petrified because, like, the next day I was on the air. And for about a year, and anybody who remembers me from a long time ago at that radio station, every single day I'd get on and say, I'm your temporary talk show host. I'm just filling in. Because if I decided to shoot off my mouth and hadn't done my homework and someone called me on it, I had the perfect excuse. Well, I'm just the guy filling in until they get a regular talk show host who knows what the hell they're talking about. I think it was, I don't know what it was, 9 or 10 months into it, I remember getting a call from one of our listeners. Hey, Mac, shut up. You got the gig. And then even then, when I left that station, I was trying to stay in more music radio. And I was, because I still at that point was wanting to do regular radio, more rock radio, as I had done earlier in my career, and stand-up comedy. And it's just people kept paying me more money. And it became a money thing for a while. They just kept paying me more money. And so I ended up doing it. And here I am. I will tell you this, though, that one thing, because what I find out is as you get older, there's more things you know and there's more things that you don't realize. And one thing I didn't realize, because when I decided to try out this show with Eric, my biggest fear is I'd been such a solo talk show host for such a long time, you feel that you may lose your independence. That, okay, I've got to share it with someone. Well, then I lose the impact. And it's just the opposite, completely the opposite. When you have someone who you have chemistry with, like I have with Eric, and hopefully he believes he has it with me, it brings out more of who you really are. You still can be strong and powerful, but when you're talking back and forth to someone, it becomes much more conversational. It becomes much more enjoyable. And to me, it's much better. And I would have never guessed that. I would have not guessed that early on in my career. But I'll tell you one more story about the first week in talk radio, really the first day in talk radio. I remember the first person that I interviewed, and it was an interview that was already set up with a book that had come out back in 89 called The BS Syndrome. Victor Salupe, I believe, was the author's name. I've always remembered it. But it was How BS Forms. and how it works through society and how it works through certain institutions and whether BS comes. I'll never forget this. BS, it's impossible for BS to come from the bottom. It's not a bottom-up thing that happens. It always comes from the top down. I just remember that him talking about that concept. And it was great because he gave examples of, you know, just, you know, where BS comes from. So I always remember that was my first guest. But the thing that I'll always remember, and I don't have dreams about it anymore, but when you first get on the air, and when you're a music DJ, you're playing, you know, you've always got the music as I did. Maybe I'm not speaking for anybody else, but to me, music was the crutch that if I ran out of things to say in the short minute and a half that I was talking anyway, which wasn't a long time, I always had that crutch to go to. That was a great security blanket. You always had the next song. You always go to the next song. Always go to the next song. So that was a great security blanket. When all of a sudden, you don't have that anymore, that's scary. And I remember the first segment. I can't remember what I talked about, but I remember the first segment I ever did in talk radio. And you go on at hypothetically, at 6 minutes after the hour you come on, and you break at 17 after the hour. So you have 16 minutes to talk. And so I planned everything. I said, I don't want to do this, but I got to sound like I'm prepared. So I had so much show prep and articles. I thought I had, 3 hours of stuff to talk about. So I get into it at about 6 after, and I'm done. I say everything I have to say, and I look at it. It's like 13 after. I still have 4 minutes to talk. And luckily, the show was only an hour. But still, it was like and I still have, well, I don't anymore, but I had for the longest time, maybe stopped at about 10 years ago, where I would still have dreams where I'm talking on the air and I run out of stuff to say and I have nothing else left in my mind and there's pure panic and I wake up, oh, okay, that was a dream. But those are the worst dreams I've ever had in my life, all based on talk radio. But now this is the greatest time. It's like doing the Super Bowl every day because things are so insane. So, yeah, we're passionate and we say the things that we believe, but there's also a great joy to come on every day on the air. And it's a great joy when you get the response from, you know, listeners. And I understand now why they come. Whenever I go on vacation, I understand why people come and say, you know, it's really great to have a voice like this, because when you get out there, when I go to New York, you know, in fact, every time when I go on vacation, I go to New York to see my dad. And then I hear the media and see the media and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm alone. I go, oh, that's it. That's why the listener relates. Because when I get out of this and I just am, you know, the influence of what's going on in society, it is so insanely liberal that at times you say, I'm looking for a voice that, might mirror the opinions that I have that is based on critical thinking and logic. And when you find it, I understand the attraction that people have. So, but thank you, everybody, for everywhere I've been in my life in talk radio. Niagara Falls, Buffalo, Rockford, Illinois, Portland, Oregon, Dallas, and now here and nationwide for the last 17 years and 2 months with Eric. So thank you all, because wouldn't be here if it wasn't the fact, if you can't bring in listeners, you don't survive. So, and believe me, I never thought I'd last 33 years in talk radio. I never thought I'd last 40 years in talk radio. Never. Just never thought that would happen. So I am blessed each and every day. As I told somebody yesterday, I said, I am blessed to be able to still continue to do this. And yes, when you say 40 years, you can say, oh, Gary, you must be close to retirement. Actually passed the age of normal retirement last year, but have no intention of retiring. None. We kid a lot, and I got some email last week. You're talking about retiring. You're not doing it. No, No, no chance. And the reason? Simplest reason of all. Too much fun. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Hurley. He's under the weather. Hopefully he's back for Monday's show. Let's go to Bill in Los Angeles. Bill, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi, Gary.
Hi. How are you?
Congrats on your longevity.
Thank you.
Speaking of 30 years ago versus today, I remember as a young newspaper reporter in 1986 how the media started obsessing on President Reagan's then minor signs of perhaps a cognitive problem. You know, they caught him napping a couple times, and they questioned, you know, how can he call ketchup a vegetable? And then that Don Henley song came out, End of Innocence, about this tired old man we elected king. And by the way, at that same time, they were also checking Joe Biden running for president a year or so later, and calling him out for his lies and plagiarism and knocking him out of the race. But you look at what they're doing, at what's going on now, there's just no comparison. There's no concern at all about obvious problems with Biden's cognitive functions, and not to mention all the lies.
Well, remember when Reagan said, and you have to remember this, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. They were saying, the media in the United States were saying that he was nuts.
Right.
That Reagan was nuts for saying this. He was putting us into another world war. They went crazy about it. Here's a difference. They were more subtle in their liberalism back then. I just went back and looked at a couple of books that were written in the early 90s about the media bias in the 1980s. And it's really interesting to go back and look at it. It was a lot more subtle. Walter Cronkite even said, you know, after he retired, yeah, we were liberal. Our bias was just more subtle, but it was there. But it could be subtle because there was no opposition to ABC, NBC, and CBS. It didn't exist anywhere. The only place it did exist was when you had really the Fairness Doctrine repealed, and then in the late 80s when conservative talk radio started coming to the forefront with Rush and others early on then. But before that, you might have had, you know, Firing Line with William Buckley, but that was played, you know, on TV, low rated, times on different TV stations. But there really wasn't any type of conservative voice. Now, yes, you have the media is absolutely blatant political activist, but the great equalizer is the internet, and conservative talk radio now is completely embedded as something that is normal within our society. And so even though there may be more liberal outlets spewing more political activism and not even attempting to have journalism, you do have the great equalizer, I believe, in the internet and conservative talk radio. But thanks so much. But yeah, those were good times, weren't they, Bill? Have a great day. 866-90-RED-EYE.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Hey, that's part one of our show. Don't miss the rest. Click part two on our website, redeyeradioshow.com, or Red Eye Radio phone app to hear the rest of the show. And thanks for listening to Red Eye Radio.